Hello, welcome to The Big Fight. Well, this week we've seen a lot of attention being focused on that air pollution crisis over northern India and on a number of other stories, which I guess is something that the government may well be saying is just as well, because otherwise we'd have spent a lot of time taking a very close look at something that happened a year ago, which is demonetization. And of course, the government has come out with a series of ad campaigns and a series of messages and tweets saying it was a big success. Demonetization worked. It was a grand success. And it set the path for the total transformation of the Indian economy. Others, less sure, many in the foreign media and here, saying, hang on, it was a disaster, it was a blunder, it didn't really work out. So very polarized views on demonetization. If you ask the people of the country, you go and get anecdotal evidence. A lot of people are confused. They're still not very sure whether it was something. It had broadly been welcomed at that time as a way to bring down black money, and many people felt it was soaking the rich, which was great. But now, a year later, many people are still somewhat unsure about it, because they've heard the reports that 99% of the cash came back and therefore the rich got away. So was it worth all the pain, all those hours standing in line? Was it really worth it? So here on this episode of The Big Fight, we're going to try and take stock a little bit. Let's try and sift through the numbers, sift through the facts, sift through the statistics, and ask ourselves a couple of questions. At the end of the day, was demonetization a success or was it a failure? Did it achieve the goals that it set out to try and achieve? And finally, the third part of it, which I guess many would say is the crux of the issue, could those same goals have been achieved without the concomitant costs that we actually had? Sometimes you can have great goals, set out to achieve them, but the path that you take could be so strong or so disastrous that maybe there were other easier ways to get to that goal. So that's what we're going to try and sort out right now. Great panel joining us, Dr. Shettigar with us, who'd been, of course, advisor to former Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee. Great to have you with us. Ritika Khera, development economist with us. Mr. T.S.R. Subramaniam, former cabinet secretary. M.K. Venu has been sitting and helping us dissect demonetization from the day it happened a year ago till now. So it's wonderful to have you with us. Rajiv Gowda joining us, Congress spokesperson, Rajya Sabha MP. Saranand Dhume joining us, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, joining us from New York. Great to have all of you with us. But before I come to any of you, can I just go across to my friend Dr. Surjit Bhalla, now member of the Prime Minister's Economic Advisory Council, therefore advising the government very closely on this. Somebody who actually, you will recall at the time of demonetization last year, we did something like 6 episodes of The Big Fight almost back to back on demonetization and its impact. And Surjit Bhalla was there for all of those. So, Dr. Bhalla, I'm going to bring us all back to some of the issues that we were discussing a year ago to see how many of them panned out and how many didn't pan out. But can I start off by asking you the basic reasons for demonetization, the reasons why the government says it did this a year ago? Have those reasons actually panned out? The goals that the government set out to achieve, have those actually been achieved?
There were several reasons given for demonetization. I think what I have consistently claimed, that the biggest effect, and if you recall in your program, I had talked about demonetization big bang or big thud, in which I laid out that the premise that, you know, how much money would be returned to the system as a metric of measuring the success or failure of demonetization was completely false. I also added that I hoped all the money came back into the system and more.
Yeah, the money all came back. So I'm glad that you're saying that wasn't the real goal for it, because if the goal was to try and take the money out of the system or to be finding undeclared black money, that didn't quite happen. But even if you look, Dr. Bhalla, at some of the other grounds that were given, fake money, you know, fighting terrorism, did that really come to pass? And I'm going to keep looking at some of the statistics later in the show, go over it item by item to see whether it actually did come to pass or not. Fake money, how much was actually discovered? 11 crores according to some estimate, 43 crore rupees according to some other estimates, to demonetize 15 lakh crores, to find 11 crores of fake currency or 43 crore rupees of fake currency. Bit excessive, some would say.
Vikram, it's important to remember and important to distinguish between the politics and the political goals of demonetization and the economic goals. That demonetization speech was at a time when terrorism was rampant in Kashmir. We had all those problems. And I think as a political leader, for Modi or any other political leader to say that, listen, this is one of the most important things to be done, is not at all something that was unusual or we think of unusual. If he had said, can you imagine him making a speech and saying, listen, the real purpose behind demonetization is an increase in tax compliance? And you would then ask, how many people know what the term tax compliance means? So therefore, we need to distinguish as analysts, as well as anchors, that, listen, clearly there were several objectives mentioned, and some of them had a higher political quotient at that point in time than the others. The economic reasons often are the least mentioned when people and leaders make policies, like in this case.
Okay, so you're saying that those references to fake currency and fake notes and cracking down on terrorism were more for political reasons than for economic reasons. But Dr. Bhalla, I guess the crux of the issue really comes down to this. You may have laudable goals. You may have, for example, a rat in your house. And you may say, I want to get rid of this rat. I want to somehow, you know, kill that rat, get the rat out of there. There are various ways to doing it. Burning down the house is one of the possible ways to actually get rid of the rat. You could burn your house down and the rat will probably die. But you have to ask yourself whether that is the right thing to do. If you want to get rid of the rat, should you burn down the house? Or should you find other ways to achieve those same goals?
Absolutely zero. And, you know, I would even say negative evidence that the economy has been hurt, that the house has been burned down, certainly not, and that the economy has been hurt rather badly by demonetization. Most people's estimates of, including mine, converge to around 0.3 to 0.4% of GDP was lost because of demonetization.
Hang on, let me just interrupt you for a minute.
Point three or point four percent
of GDP. Even if that's a figure,
so
and not the 2% of GDP,
GDP,
still a lot
losses,
of money. That's still a lot of money to lose.
An economist, or you sometimes think like an economist. Why aren't we looking at what the RBI has been doing in terms of hiking real interest rates over the last year? That clearly, first point is the GDP, as you know, was already slowing down, and second, that I think the most important factor determining GDP in this or any other country is monetary policy, is the level of real interest rates. And we have got, or the RBI has achieved, the second highest level of real interest rates in the world. And you're telling me that's not a cause for, so how much loss? I estimate that loss to be about five times, about 2% of GDP, by what the demonetization caused.
Okay, look, I'm sure we can continue to have the debate, is the Reserve Bank of India doing the right thing, and we can blame the RBI and say, why are you keeping interest rates too high? And that's really the reason why the economy is slowing down. And that's a discussion we can have. But coming back to the goals of demonetization, let's push a digital economy, push digital payments, try and crack down on black money. Those goals, right? Was there, in retrospect, a better way of doing it than the way it was actually done, making people stand in line week after week, day after day, everything that happened, and whatever the losses that there were, was there a better way to do it?
Actually, very important that you ask me that. I have sat about it for the last 13, 14 years. I wrote a paper on tax compliance for the Ministry of Finance in 2002, showing how shockingly low tax compliance was in India. And mind you, over the last 14 years, I haven't been able to come up with a measure. We looked at it, advocated policies. I think exposed demonetization was absolutely the most brilliant, the most necessary strategy to increase tax compliance in India. So that's number one. I cannot think, maybe it's my inadequacy, but I would challenge anybody to show me.
Challenge somebody to show you a better way? I don't know, maybe we can have a bash at it later, but have all the linkages that you're talking about. Connect everything up into Aadhaar and PAN as is being done right now. Go after people who are not evading taxation. That's another route to do the same thing. So it's not that there aren't other ways to increase compliance. It's happened around the world, by the way. Many countries have very high levels of compliance without necessarily having demonetization. And in this case, let's face it, There were loopholes. A lot of people were able to launder their black money by using something as obvious as cash in hand in the hands of real estate companies, which is something all of us were discussing 2 or 3 days into demonetization, that that's the route that people are going to use to escape. They will be able to launder their black money. And guess what? A lot of them seem to have been able to do just that.
You know, in an absolute sense, the level of taxation that we have in India, personal income tax, not corporate income tax, we have the highest effective corporate tax rate in the world. And that is really, really beyond the pale. But I'm talking about personal income tax. 10, 20, and 30, you compare it to the rest of the world, they're very moderate, reasonable rates of taxation if people comply. If people comply. And people in India have not complied. Now I want to come to the other part that you raise on the cash versus non-cash. You know, and the figures are really staggering as to the effect of demonetization on non-cash payments versus cash payments. For example, if you take cash, and you know, I'm comparing what the growth rate was last year before demonetization and the growth rate now after demonetization. And I'm looking at like with like. So I'm looking January to August this year versus January to August last year versus January to August the year before, and so on and so forth. And for the first time ever, basically the cash withdrawn from ATMs moved negative at about an 8% rate. Then you want, you know, take total digital transactions. Let's just take that one, which is an aggregate of all forms of digital transactions. They were growing at 23% last year. So good solid rate of growth. We were getting digitized, but post-demonetization, they're growing at double the rate. Now, we can say that, listen, the growth rate was not, the shock of demonetization doesn't justify this. And I will say first, this is double the rate. And second, if you're worried about the growth rate of the economy, look to Mumbai, don't look to Delhi.
Okay. Fine, we will, I think, in the rest of the program, discuss the digital payments, whether this is the only way to get it going. But Dr. Bhalla, before you leave us, one last question. And this is a question that you will no doubt recall I asked you repeatedly last year, just after demonetization. A year later, I've spent this year actually asking this question to just about every financial thinker I can think of, including many in the government. I haven't yet been able to get a satisfactory answer to this question. So a year later, let me fire this question out one more time, and then maybe all of us can discuss it. Why didn't the government, before it went ahead with demonetization, print a large stock of 500 rupee notes? Ask the Reserve Bank of India, print the new 500 rupee notes. Say it's a new series we're coming out, it's a new design that we're coming out with. Print those notes, keep them in a warehouse somewhere. And then, after demonetization, we could have remonetized the economy within a week, 10 days, because it just takes the time to send those notes from the warehouses to wherever it needs to be dispensed. If they had done that, you could have had the effects of demonetization, but the pain of remonetization would have been down to a week or 10 days. Why weren't those notes printed and kept ready?
Absolutely, very good question, and which will be studied and will have. I think what one gleans from the evidence that we do have, that a surprise element was absolutely necessary. And therefore, if we had, basically our system is very, very leaky. And if they had done that, then basically people would have known about it, or likely would have known about it.
Dr.
And
Bala,
as it is, Vikram.
Dr. Bala, hang on. Actually not that's not the case, because the RBI could have announced it. The Reserve Bank of India could have simply said, we are printing a new series of 500 rupee notes. It's a new design that we have got. Even if that had leaked, they could have made an announcement. Even if it had leaked, people would have said, fine, they're printing a new series of 500 rupee notes. No one would have necessarily said they're about to demonetize the entire economy. So they could have printed it, and even if secrecy had been broken, it's not a problem. They could have even announced it, that we are about to do this. It would have been a simple way to have demonetized and then remonetize without any problem.
Because that's the leaky. So let's go back. There's some bit of circumstantial evidence that the entire demonetization exercise was preponed. And that is why they were left holding the baby or not having enough cash in the system. So, you know how in India it operates. Somebody says, listen, Why is this godown being filled with rupee notes? You can't do it in the middle of the night, print those notes. You can't even, I've even explored the possibility, could we have asked foreigners to build the notes? Even that is leaky. You know, we don't know. I mean, it just is, what I'm saying, Vikram, I agree with you, that's a very good question. What we, as objective observers, have to come and decide is, could it have been done in a country called India? In a country where people are even hesitant to criticize the RBI for what I believe are really, really extreme actions. You know, we don't even do that.
All right, Dr. Bhalla, thanks for that candidness that, you know, it is a good question which is still unanswered. So I'm glad you're accepting that. Could it have worked or not have worked? I don't know. But thank you so much, Sujit Bhalla, joining us. Let me now get in the rest of the panel. Saranand Dhume, why don't I get you in first. Year after demonetization, you just heard what Sujit Bhalla saying. Best way to enforce tax compliance. Digital payments have gone up. The costs were not as high as people are saying the costs have been. How do you respond to everything that we've just heard?
Well, thanks, Vikram. Let me start with a sort of, you know, brief opening remark, because I think one of the benefits of being away from India is that, you know, the way this debate looks in the rest of the world is very, very different. So let me just make four very quick points. The first is that ahead of demonetization, we all know that there was not a single credible expert, economist or technocrat who had suggested this move. After demonetization, there is not a single credible expert, economist or technocrat, not closely affiliated either with the government or with the ruling BJP, who has said this is a good idea. There are a plethora of experts who are both very intimately familiar with India, such as Kaushik Basu, Raghuram Rajan, Pranab Bardhan, and also Western economists who don't really have a dog in this fight, you could say. People like Larry Summers, Ken Rogoff, Steve Forbes, who have panned this decision as perhaps one of the most foolish decisions made by a developing country in the last 75 years. So I think that if we were having this debate anywhere else, the debate would not even be, was demonetization good or was demonetization bad? The debate would rather be, was this the most foolish thing that India has done in the last 25 years, or was it the most foolish thing India has done in 75 years? That would be the contours of the debate. And finally, in closing, I'd like to say that, you know, if we look forward rather than looking backward, I think the real question that India faces is that, can this kind of thing happen again? Have we finally, by criticizing demonetization, at least achieved the goal of banishing Bharatnatyam economists and Bharatnatyam economics? Or is this a danger that still lurks, that something completely wild coming out of nowhere could come and cripple essentially the Asia's third largest economy?
Many would say, in response to what you have just said, in a sense, perhaps the best people to decide on whether something has worked or not worked are the people of the country in a democracy, and they voted in Uttar Pradesh, and they voted in after demonetization. They gave a thumping victory to the BJP. So in a sense, the voters said, we support what you've done, you were trying to do the right thing.
I think that's a perfectly fair comment. I think the voters did support it. And I think we also, if we're objective about this, must recognize that India's economic history is filled with poor economic decisions that were very popular. I don't think bank nationalization, in retrospect, was the wisest move. It was very popular. I'm not sure that the labor laws that have made manufacturing such a relatively small component of India's GDP were a good idea, but they were very popular. Hugo Chavez was very popular in Venezuela. So democracy, particularly democracy in the developing world, but not only in the developing world, is full of examples of decisions that are viewed as economically catastrophic, but nonetheless, for various emotional and other reasons, are popular with voters. And I would certainly put demonetization in that category.
And that's one of the reasons why something else might be following soon. We keep having speculation as to what the next such plan could be in the build-up to the elections. Who knows, inheritance tax, something like that might well be coming right around the corner. Mr. Subramaniam, you looked at the whole thing, first as an idea, and B, as the execution of it, right? Both need to be looked at, because you could have a great idea and execute it badly. You could have a bad idea and execute it badly also. Which way do you think this particular went? Obviously, there are questions. I was asking Dr. Bhalla that question about why notes weren't printed, but there could be other questions.
70 years, we are in the worst human index in every sector. In education, public health, nutrition, child care, poverty. Latest Piketty says 0.1% of the population has 50% of the national wealth. I do not have the kind of reverence or regard or devotion to our economists. I mean, this is my first broad, very broad point. My second broad point is, you talked of a rat. I think there's a monster there with a gun. We are responding not to a rat. 70 years that monster has been there. That monster has been a black economy, a parallel economy. You cannot deal, no country can even improve with a black economy or a parallel economy. So for me, this was seen as the first shot in a war, not a battle, not one gun, not one event, in a war. For me, these are extremely critical years, because what we have done in the last 70 years has to change now. You said we have no more, we need a tremendously large number of new announcements. We need to shake up the entire system. It can just cannot be business as usual. Lastly, this is a country where 1 lakh people commit suicide a year. In Gorakhpur, 3,000 people die of encephalitis. In every hospital, 30. Look at the hardship of the whole population.
You're talking of 15 heart attacks. Let me just get you in there. Basic argument being that this is, it's not the equivalent of a rat in a room. If you've got three terrorists inside the room with guns and they are that powerful, you may have to burn down the house to kill them, and it might be the correct thing to do.
Right. So I agree that the black economy is a monster, but the cash component of it is the rat in the house. Yeah. So when you do demonetization, you're actually going, at best, going to get the rat. You're not going to get the monster, because the black economy is a flow. It's not a stock. If I earn a black income, I'm not going to keep it as cash in my mattress, right? I'm going to reinvest it in my business, or I buy gold, or I make a big wedding or something like that. So people keep spending that, and if you demonetize, then at best you'll get that. And I've said that you stole my line that even the rat got away in this case. And there is a real danger of the house having been burnt down. I mean, we're seeing early signs of a slowdown of job losses and other impacts.
Dr. Bhalla says blame the RBI for that because they're keeping interest rates too high.
Yeah. I think there are many other things going on, but you cannot absolve what demonetization did, because this is a cash dependent economy, right? A large part is in the informal sector. It runs on cash, and you drained the economy of cash for about 2 or 3 months. So that's going to have an impact on the demand, at least for 2 months. And whether that demand will lead to fewer shifts, more job losses, lesser demand, that kind of downward spiral, whether it lasts 2 months or 6 months or 6 years, we can't tell beforehand. Okay. So it's the uncertainty that has been brought into the economy which is damaging.
Okay, uncertainty is what you want. Before I come to you, Dr. Shettigar, let me get you in on this point. So, again, it fundamentally, whatever the benefits are that have been told, you must strike a blow against the black economy. Most people agree with that. Very good to shift towards digital payments. Again, laudable goal, nobody would argue about that, you know, tackling terrorism. Question still comes back, could there have been another way to do this?
So, there could have been, or it could have been implemented in a different way. That is a different question. But as far as the giving a big blow, as Mr. Subramaniam has pointed out, sometimes you require harsh measure, disruptive measure. And the very fact that the Prime Minister had to address the nation before announcing, he was also aware of the adverse impact, that is in terms of inconvenience to the people. So he sought the cooperation of the people in this great task. Now, with regard to the tackling of the black money, now the very fact that 99% of the money outside the system has come back into the banking system, the many people argue that where is the black money? In fact, the black money has been trapped. Now it is for the IT department to investigate out of that which is the portion of the black money.
But already the amount that they seem to be tracking is something like, we know, 17,000 crores as various figures are coming in.
There is only one case, 17,000 crores relating to 35,000 companies, shell companies. And they started investigation. Only 1%, the 1%, because they could not disclose their source of income. I suspect that this is due to the unfair means, maybe through the bribe, maybe relating to the political leadership or the bureaucracy who cannot disclose their source of the income. Whereas in this case, it is their source of the income is not unfair. Only thing that they avoided paying the tax.
Problem with this argument, I'll tell you why. Even Yashwant Sinha, former finance minister on this channel, said that there are 13 lakh accounts on which notices have gone. Total amount is roughly 3 lakh crore. This is the latest figure from the government. Now, most of these are very small sums, small relative to what people were thinking about. You know, like these accounts are 5 lakh, 6 lakh, 7 lakh rupees. Now, there are individuals, middle class, maybe some of them agricultural who don't have to pay tax, you know. So, now they're all going to challenge it. And Mr. Yashwant Sinha said, it's not as if you can't today legally say that this is, we can straight away appropriate 50% or whatever of this. My point, Vikram, is that these are all small fellows, as Ritika said, rats. The big guys, the big guys have already pushed their money into real estate, foreign tax havens, those networks, you know. So, for heaven's sake, the real black money may have already disappeared, because before demonetization, people are pushing money into real estate. Political parties were pushing money into real estate. It is all recorded, you know. So everybody is shooting in the air, you know. So, let us wait and see. And last point, Surjit Bhalla, in his article in Express day before on demonetization day, has made a very valid point. He says that the tax department is viewed as an accomplice of the corrupt and the non-tax tax evaders. So, unless they kind of morally clean, they become clean or they kind of become honest, it will be very difficult to recover all these taxes. So that's a big caveat that Surjit has put. And Surjit also put another very interesting data in his. He says the first quarter this financial year, April, May, June, he has said that the GDP numbers, nominal GDP, 7.9% is the lowest since 1996. So, obviously, GDP has fallen.
Okay.
And he's also said that besides GDP falling,
inflation is down. Also
Vikram, tax
nominal GDP growth will be down because inflation's also fallen.
No, so even otherwise, the GDP growth is one of the lowest in
it. Yeah.
And the other point that Surjit has made, I'm quoting him because he's part of the advisory council now. He has said that the tax collection, direct tax collection for the same period, is lower than the budgeted figure. Budget figure is 15.5%.
Okay.
So we haven't even got a big tax growth as yet, you know, as per official data.
Retrospectively, just pause for a minute. I want to throw something out for all of us to discuss. Then I want to start looking at some of the numbers also. Let's try and dive into the numbers and see if we can get them to tell us whether this was successful or not successful a year later. By the way, the real question we're asking is, was it economically successful or not? Politically, it worked. Obviously, it worked. And that sometimes can be a bit scary, because if things are economically somewhat not quite good, but politically, you know, makes a lot of sense, you might have a lot more of that, which could be bad for the economy. And I think Saranand was talking about some of that. Let us rewind, if we can, a year ago. As I said, we did a series of programs at that time, getting in all the experts, and almost by consensus, we arrived a year ago at five or six sort of factors that might help us judge whether demonetization would be a success or not. This is just after demonetization had happened. Worth rewinding to that now, just to see where we actually stand on all six of those grounds. This is what we were saying on the big fight a year ago. Is demonetization going to lead to a windfall gain for the government? Now, remember, there are 15.4 lakh crores of old notes. These are the notes that were banned. The question that I had asked 3 weeks ago was, how many of those notes are going to be deposited back in the system by the end of December? If that gap had been 5 lakh crores or 6 lakh crores or some figure like that, it means that a lot of black money has been extinguished. There's a windfall gain for the RBI or for the government, and that could come back to people, that could be used for infrastructure, that could be used for various ways. Now, a certain number is already out there, and we will look at it. Question number two. What is going to happen to the banks? Are the banks suddenly going to get a lot of additional deposits which they can use? Will interest rates come down and so on and so forth? Question number three, somewhat linked to the first question, is there going to be a budget bonanza? It would have happened if there had been a lot of undeclared money. The RBI gets a windfall gain, gives it as a dividend to the government. May still happen if a lot of that money that is out there is declared under the amnesty scheme, because then the government gets a tax bonanza and can pass it on to all of us when the budget comes. So Is there going to be a budget bonanza? That's question number three. Question number four, will the existing stock of black money be wiped out, or is it going to get laundered in some way or the other? That's question number four. Question number five, somewhat linked, what will happen to the future generation of black money? Is that being significantly impacted, or is it a one-time surgical strike on black money, but in the future, chalta rahega, corruption will continue, black money will continue? And finally, question number six, how long will this disruption continue? And after all this time, it's been 37, 38 days, there still looks as if there is disruption, and it's an open-ended question as to how long it will continue. This is the way it was being pretty much stated a year ago, right? Now, if you look at that, future generation of black money might be one area where you could still say, Mr. Subramani, why don't I start with you? You could still say, well, maybe some of the steps that have been done will curb that. A lot of that didn't actually happen. The notes did not. All the notes were released. There was no budget bonanza.
I agree.
Banks, you know, the interest rates didn't come out. The banks didn't have that much of a stock. And there was a fair amount of disruption. So on that ground, didn't quite work. Were those still the relevant questions to have asked, though?
You're talking of an analysis a week later. I was there the next morning, 8 o'clock, without the facts, without details. Today, when I look back, I don't have a recording, look back, I can't really think of anything that I would have changed 1 year later to what I said at that time. The reason is, we are, in my view, not looking at the real issues. We've missed them for the last 50, 60 years, with all due respect to everybody. What is this economy? This economy, our political interest and our business interest is the only one that is projected in this country. We don't have the interest of the entire agri sector, which is 60% of employment. We have the informal sector, which gives 90% of employment. Now, there are no data, no statistics. They get money at 300% going up to 10,000%. These are all, if you see demo as a one-shot war, it's a failure. If you see it as a large, long war for 5 years, with a large number of things to come, GST, Digital India, every village connected, then you have a formal economy. If you start doing it like that, and hopefully more of these would come, and then bringing the 6 crore units into the formal sector, bringing the entire agricultural population into insurance and health insurance, then the picture will be different. I think this, you have to look at it in this kind of a large, long-term, or medium-term sector. I don't see it more than 5 years for it to unfold, but give it 5 years, don't prejudge at this point.
Nobody will dispute with you. There's been a long era of black money which is eating away the country. Farmers are in distress. All of that is perfectly true. This is not, we're not discussing right now whether the economic direction of the country is correct or wrong, right? That's not what we are specifically looking at right now. Specifically, the subject under debate is, as part of this direction, you can agree with the basic direction, but as part of that entire thing, that particular step, demonetization, was it correct or was it not correct? That's the only question.
This shock was required. I will concede this point, which you indirectly asked Subhajit Bella, probably because of his official position, probably he was not in a position to answer it fully candidly. Bihar had gone, UP was coming. It was important to handle UP. Timing could possibly be attached to that.
Right.
Possibly, almost certainly. On the other hand, I'm not worried about timing. I'm worried about how good the shot was, how important the shot was, what the timing was.
All right. Rajiv Gowda, I haven't had a chance to get you in yet, and then Sadan Dhume, let me come back to you. Rajiv Gowda, you heard what Mr. Subramaniam saying, look, the direction is the right direction, and this was a big shot that was required. Your take on that?
We have been addressing the issue of black money for a long time. The 1991 liberalization was one of the first major moves that lowered taxes and tariffs and eliminated the need for smuggling and illegal economy on a significant scale. Now, the economy is moving to, you know, GST will bring more entities into the formal sector to allow more businesses to be tracked, etc. You will see financial technology, digitization also moving in that direction. So therefore, this big bang, this torpedo at the on the economy was not needed. What has been the impact of this move? Think about, just look at three major sectors and the gross value added drop of about $3 billion in the quarter in after demonetization in manufacturing, construction, and agriculture. Three huge employment generating sectors. Okay, now can we afford this kind of a loss to people and their livelihoods and their jobs? You looked at the increase in imports from China of 23% after demonetization. At the cost of whom? Small and medium enterprises that had to shut down, and as a result, again, lots of people losing their jobs. You've seen MGNREGA payments go up to record levels. And why does that happen? Because people who moved to the cities looking for construction and other informal work had to go back to their villages and look for succor. So basically, when you look at the kind of negative impact that this has had on the most vulnerable people in India, it is a shame that this government managed to win an election after that. And that election was won by communal polarization, split in the opposition, etc. Uttar Pradesh was not a verdict only on demonetization. And if this government and the Prime Minister inflicted this kind of damage on a growing economy, actually at that point a slowing economy, it is a shame that we still have a Prime Minister in office who can inflict such damage for political gain.
The Prime Minister is going to stay in office until you and the opposition can figure out even a remotely likely chance to de-seat him or to unseat him. Saranan Dhume, let me get you in on the points that that Mr. Subramaniam was talking about. He said, look, you've got to look at the overall direction that's being taken and the steps that are being taken, and the overall direction in recasting the Indian economy is going to pay huge dividends 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, and it had to be done, and this was a step in that. I want to get your take in that, because yes, there are lots of steps that are being taken and which would be a part of that, the thrust to digitization. Even GST, for example, all the short-term pain that there is, I think a lot of people would say whatever the dislocation is, it is a step in that direction. Would you say demonetization should also be part of that? It is part of the process of recasting the Indian economy and we should just accept it.
Let me disagree, and let me illustrate my disagreement for your viewers with a very simple analogy. Let's just say that I'm a grossly overweight person and my goal is to lose weight. And I wake up one morning and decide that I'm going to chop off my leg. I chop off my leg, and of course I weigh myself, and I have lost weight because I've chopped off my leg. Turns out that may not be the smartest way, but then I decide that when someone asks me about this, I say, well, you know, I've also gone on a great diet, and I've also given up smoking, and I'm also eating a lot of salads and everything else. And so, you know, in the grand scheme of things, my chopping off my leg maybe wasn't such a bad thing because I'm doing all these other things. The question is, you have to separate all these things. You can't create this grab bag and suddenly toss demonetization in the middle of it and say that, well, there's some other stuff that's happening that's pretty good, and therefore demonetization is all part of it. We are here to look at demonetization. We're here to analyze it separately, and it's pretty clearly a disaster.
The reality is Aadhaar, which was the creation of the Congress Party, is the one that has increased the MGNREGA. Rajiv Gandhi said 16% was leakage there. Now the leakage is less than 5%. Yes, I'm not talking political. I'm not talking of who did this, etc., etc. Number one. Number two is, in all this discussion, you talked of pain. I know hell of a lot of pain going on in India. I will rate the entire pain to a minuscule smaller amount. Pain in this. The Rabi production was very good last year, not less. The Kharif production was very good last year, but not less than previous year in the last. Secondly, it has not touched the small sector. It has not touched the tiny sector. They are just not open to official finance, whatever. They are open exclusively at 300 to 10,000% rate of. The whole point is, you need the 6 crore units have to come onto the ambit. The issue is not 7% or 8% or 9%. The issue is it 15% or 30% or 100%? We got to have a completely new look at it. I'm afraid you are looking at a small detail in a large canvas.
Yes.
And therefore, I do may well be right. But I will come to the conclusion 10 years later, if the country collapses and dies, I will say he was right. If the country flourishes, he was wrong.
But there's a case for short-term pain also, you know.
Even Dhumel.
Yeah.
Now, when he says that disaster, on what basis he is telling?
What's the basis?
Now, look at, in the first quarter, no doubt there is a deceleration in the growth to 5.7%, which was very much expected because of the fall in the consumption expenditure. Anybody who is aware of the elementary economics knows that whenever the demand falls, that affects the growth. It happened. But afterwards, now since the August, there is a revival in the manufacturing activity. There is a revival in the export. There is a rise in the import, whereas the gold import has fallen. Okay. Why there is a rise in the machinery or the capital equipment, which say direct indication that there is a revival in the manufacturing.
Why does any of that say that demonetization was the right thing to do? It may say that the economy is not doing badly. That's a different debate. Why does any of that prove that demonetization was the right thing to have done? Ritika?
No, they conveniently ignore the adverse effect of the external factors. Okay. If the demonetization was the sole reason, why there was a deceleration from 7.6% in 15-16 to 7.1% in last year? Now, if you compare during this year's growth, which is expected to be 6.7% to 7%, even if you assume that it will be 6.7%, still fall in the growth rate will not be as much as the fall in the previous year.
You know, I think, Ritika, let me just get you in here. I guess, you know, we are slightly skirting around the issue because, yes, I have absolutely no doubt to answer what Mr. Subramaniam said. I have absolutely no doubt that in 10 years, the Indian economy is not going to be collapsing, neither is India going to collapse. It is going to flourish. It is going to grow. We're going to become one of the largest economies in the world. No one's doubting any of that. Is the economy eventually going to pick up? I'm 100% sure.
But still, you have to look at the effects of demo. Yeah?
The specific question right now, which I'm trying to understand, was it still the right thing to have done? And why am I asking this question is, can it happen again? Which is, I think, something which everyone's holding their breath for.
Right.
The biggest joke on the 8th was you send out somebody a WhatsApp message saying there's a live speech at 8 p.m. tonight. Everyone starts to shake a little bit. Yeah.
So I think Sadanand's analogy is only very slightly flawed because at least in his case, he managed to lose weight at the end of the day. We've done demonetization, but we've not really reaped any benefits. And all the other things that are being touted as benefits, whether it's increase in the tax base or tax collections or digitization, all of that was happening steadily in any case.
But so it's grown. The digital numbers have risen faster.
There hasn't been a structural break because of demonetization. It is on trend. All of these things, they're on trend. There was a bit of a blip for a few months, but they've come back on trend. So that's why I say that demonetization is neither here nor there. And if it is at all, either here or there, it's going to be in the negative because we can see the human cost. You don't have to be an economist.
I've spoken to the chief statistician of India, and he told me that the effect of demonetization on the small industry, the larger universe of 5 lakh companies, is the data is yet to be actually collected, collated. He said it will come late. But there's an RBI study which shows that post-demonetization, the quarter, small industries lost 58% of their sales. And there's a latest study, All India Manufacturers Organization, they're part of various government committees. They did a basically representing small industries and traders. Their survey, 10,000 units of their own, shows about 30% to 40% employment loss is still there. So the income and employment loss in the medium term, Vikram, it is still there. Even if I agree with Subramaniam that there would be long-term benefit, in 2 years' time, these people are so vulnerable. In the long run, we are all dead, you know.
Can I make a very short point? I had an intense study of this in different contexts. Out of 6 crore units in India, with average employment of 5 persons, only 91 are known to the Reserve Bank. 9%.
Okay.
So the statistics, they just do not have any statistics on the remaining 91%. It is the answer to her short point is in Tamil Nadu, we have this example, you know, very well that, you know, somebody wants a child and goes around the banyan tree and the Pandit says go 2008 times. At 54th time, she stops. She says, has the child half come here? That's his time. We have to wait 5 years for the change
wait
to come.
Wait for 5 years. Rajiv Gowda, let me just ask you one question. Rajiv Gowda, many people are saying, I mean, the political impact of this is still up. Do you think it's possible that we will have other such steps in the run-up to the 2019 elections?
We should have.
don't think the government is going to experiment anymore with the economy and demonstrate their incompetence in managing it. If anything, you will see all kinds of new identity politics, religion, wars, you know, there will be adventures on those fronts to cover up for the failures to deliver on the great promises of Achay Din.
Saranan, all right, so I just want to get your quick reaction to that on what
economic
said,
damage,
because
Saranan, from this
comparing demonetization with GST, I mean, I would say there's a difference, because GST is something that all political parties have been pushing for. It was a national consensus around it. The Congress, among the parties that was pushing for it, you could question the implementation. You could question whether shortcuts were taken in effort to try and get consensus. But would you conceptually separate demonetization and GST?
No, absolutely. And this, and you know, and the simplest way to say that is that, you know, demonetization was a an awful idea badly implemented, and GST is an excellent idea badly implemented. And that's really where the distinction lies.
Okay, let me now turn to the audience out here and get their quick reaction before we end the show. Okay, look, a year after demonetization, let me do a quick, very unscientific snap poll. A year later, how many of you think that demonetization was a good idea? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, so there are still people who think it was a good idea. How many of you think it could have been better implemented? Better implemented. Okay, so even the same people saying it could have been better implemented. But there are people who think it was a good idea. We're nearly out of time. I want to get everyone to give their final thoughts. I think a year later, we're about to bury the demonetization debate and move on to, as Mr. Subramaniam says, figure out the rest of what's happening around the economy. Let me give everyone a chance to come up with their final take on what they feel about demonetization itself a year later. Good, bad, ugly, disaster, eventually will have great benefits. Rajiv Gowda, why don't I start with you and then I'll come to the others.
Well, I can only quote Dr. Manmohan Singh. It was a disaster and a monumental blunder, organized loot and legalized plunder. Basically, I'm just grateful to see that the Indian economy is recovering from this disastrous move and that the people of India are resilient enough that they will pick up and move on.
Jagdish Shettigar.
Demonetization is definitely a good move, but it is only in the curative in nature. As far as the generation of the black money in future is concerned, preventive measures are required, because many laws, whether it is the relating to the trade or even the electoral funding, electoral reform, that is a major source of the black money. Unless and until we tackle these laws, we will not be able to prevent the generation of the black money.
Okay, Ritika, last quick thought from you.
So it was a bad policy, very badly implemented. As far as tax compliance is concerned, that comes up again and again. The problem has always in India been tax administration. And a chain is only as strong as the weakest link. And in our case, the tax administration is the weakest link. Demonetization does nothing to fix that link. Yeah? So I feel that even the strongest argument that has come so far in favor of demonetization is actually a very weak argument. The human cost has hardly been talked about, right? We look at increase in digital payments, but we forget to talk about how people were tortured in these queues and, you know, even the few deaths that happened. And the second
80%
point
of them supported.
And the second point actually relates to this, that I think of it as a populist move in the derogatory sense of the term, that it is a political party claiming to represent the common people. And because people trusted the leader, they are able to, you know, still believe that kind of narrative. To me, it's kind of surprising that I have to still 1 year later say that the black economy is a flow, it is not a stock, demonetization can get at the stock. It's just so obvious. But it's incredible that you're still having to repeat the same very simple kind of argument.
All right. So, Subramaniam, last thoughts.
For me, it was the government or the system declaring black money, parallel economy as a proclaimed offender. It has not been done, and therefore, a series of measures have to come. I'm already seeing three or four now. I hope more will come.
But
all I can say is the human cost, madam, is minuscule compared to what the average man is going through every day, not only in this month. Lastly, do not separate economy and and in a democracy, please go together with and the people are extremely important. And our economy is not just large industry or small industry, which is 3 crores, etc. To my mind, the key point is a war has started. Will they sustain it? Is it purely political? Is it genuine? These are the important questions. If it is genuine, it is good. Otherwise, I think it's dangerous for the country.
All right, Vino, last thoughts.
So, Vikram, quick, taking from what Subramaniam said, if Thomas Piketty said 0.1% of the people today hold 50% of wealth, I don't think all the measures taken so far has affected that 50% stock, whether it's in real estate or in gold or in tax havens.
I agree.
Not happened at all. Whether it will happen in the next 10 years, God alone knows. I don't want another shock like this. There are other ways of giving shock to the system, more rational ways of giving shock to the system.
All right. Last words from you, Saranand.
I'd say it was an economic blunder of vast proportions. However, it was politically quite brilliant. And the fact that it can be both these things, economically disastrous but politically successful, ought to worry all of us a lot.
All right. That's something which we should continue to worry about, I guess, that, yeah, if something is not economically good but still politically attractive, you could potentially have more of it, I guess, is the point that Saranand is trying to make. All right. Thank you all so much. I think a year later, we should finally bring a curtain on our big fights on demonetization and how many we've done on that. You can, I guess, by now make up your own mind on whether you think it was a great idea or a bad idea, a good idea badly implemented, a bad idea badly implemented, a bad idea well implemented. I leave all of that decision-making to you now at this stage. I think you've heard enough about demonetization to last you one lifetime. You're watching The Big Fight. We'll be back next week.